Good morning, everybody. Hope you're doing well. Stefan Molyneux from freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Very, very much appreciated. Tis the 18th of May, 2025, and we are here for our Sunday morning philosophy chat fest. And happy to take your questions, issues, challenges, problems. You know the general list. Happy to take your support. And you can tip on the app. You can tip in the website. You can tip at freedomain.com/donate. All right. So, just while I'm waiting for questions to come in, somebody said, what should one do when one has a profound moral realignment that casts one's previous actions and mode of being in a deeply negative light? And we'll do the first 45 minutes open. Second 45 minutes will be donor only, where the super spice can emerge like a sandworm off the bowels of the desert. And you should check out the Dune review that friends of mine and my daughter did. It was really good. So, what should one do when one has a profound moral realignment that casts one's previous actions and mode of being, in a deeply negative light? Now, of course, foundational to moral progress in the world is realizing you were not great before, right? I mean, key to losing weight is recognizing that you're overweight. Key to gaining muscles is recognizing that you are flaccid. Yeah, the show is 5445, The Truth About Dune. Yeah, really, really good. So all progress is the uncovering of negativity. I mean, I don't study how to learn English because I already speak English. But if I wanted to speak Japanese, I would need to study Japanese because I recognize I don't speak Japanese, right? So all progress is the uncovering of a deficiency. And of course, moral progress is when you realize that you are living immorally, amorally, anti-morally, something, right? Something. If you want to share, you can. You don't have to, obviously. I would say that for myself, I was not overly addicted to the respect for property rights in my early teens. That was not good. I mean, I was a boy far more sinned against than sinning, and I did not recognize any foundational respect for social norms because society had done nothing to protect me and, in fact, seemed to be celebrating my lack of protection. So I dated around in my teens and early 20s. And I was not the most considerate of the effects of that on others. It was not good. Now, how do you deal with that? And just hit me with a why. I mean, you can share moral progress or moral worth talking about your mother's formative experiences in Germany. Now, I need to finish watching the Savage Peace, the documentary on post-war Germany. So I need to do that. And of course, I don't know what my mother's experience were. She only told me one story about the war, which is how she as a child had to be very affectionate with a Russian tank commander so he would not destroy the village that people were taking refuge in. Satan himself alone knows what that means. But it's probably not good. So, yeah, let me do some more research and then we'll talk about it. So, yeah, have you had that kind of moral revolution where you look back and you say, that was not good. That was not good. Now, I mean, Nothing that I did involved the initiation of the use of force, or and I've never been a violent person that way. Passionate, yes. Violent, never. So I did what I did before love came to town, but I did what I did with the willing and voluntary participation of others, except for the lack of respect for property rights, which was not participatory. But I mean, nothing terrible. So what do you do? You can tell me the details if you want about what's changed for you morally, what you've recognized or realized. Or you can just tell me a way in which you handled it. And I'm curious how people deal with a moral revolution. And of course, there are some that are theoretical and some that are more practical. So a theoretical one for me would be something like, when I was an objectivist, I supported statism. I mean, obviously, it was supposed to be statism involved around the military, the police, law courts, maybe prisons, right? So it was like that. But it was a break in principle of the non-aggression principle, right? It was a theoretical break. Did it have any particular effect on the world? Not really. Was it a theoretical break with the universal validity of the non-aggression principle? Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But the dating around, yeah, I mean, the women like to date, I like to date. And again, it wasn't anything particularly terrible, but it also wasn't ideal behavior and was not great either for the women or for myself. But I would say that it was probably worse, slightly worse for the women than it was for me, just because of female nature versus male nature. When it comes to dating, women tend to be a little bit more K-selected. Men tend to be a little bit more R-selected for the simple, you know, sperm to egg ratio, right? Men had to be nimble with regards to reproductive opportunities because throughout a lot of human evolution, relatively few males got to reproduce relative to females, right? So we had to be kind of nimble and responsive. So I'll tell you my sort of thoughts and experience with regards to moral change, moral revolution, and so on, and how I've handled it, and perhaps it would be better for you to find out, or good for you to, or helpful for you to find out how at least one person, i.e. myself, has handled it. So, it is an unrealistic standard to say that you must know something before you know it. There's limitations and there's caveats. The general principle is you cannot be held responsible for not knowing something before you know it, with the exception that you have to have not been exposed to it or actively avoiding the knowledge, right? So let's say there's a medical treatment that causes harm, but you don't know it as a doctor, right? So you keep doing this medical treatment. It turns out it has little benefit, but causes harm. Significant. The benefits are vastly less than the costs. Now, if this has been talked about, but you've actively avoided reading about it, or you've actively avoided learning about it, but the knowledge is out there and so on, then you are responsible for the avoidance of knowledge. However, if you're in the position of, you know, the goosebump, oh my God, the first researcher to figure out this stuff, Dr. Naomi Wolf might be, or at least her crew might be in this category. So, if you were the first person to figure it out, well, you couldn't know before you knew. And then, of course, there is a debate factor, right? So, all medical treatments profit certain people, and so they will resist any intimations that that medical treatment is negative or difficult or bad or whatever, right? So those people would be morally responsible for fighting back, and not if they're doing it in a dishonorable or dishonest fashion, right? If they're just doing it using, you know, the usual tools of slander and ridicule and all other kinds of nonsense, right? Dangerous nonsense. So if you've never heard, as a doctor, you've not been avoiding the knowledge, and you've never heard that a particular treatment is far more costly than it is beneficial. In other words, it's not really a treatment, it's a harm, right? If you've never heard of it, and everyone tells you it's fine, the data tells you it's fine, your school told you it was fine, the best practices tell you it's fine, your college or your governing body tells you it's good, okay. I mean, we do have to make decisions in this life, and we try to make decisions based upon reasonably complete information, right? So, can you be held responsible for when the information is universal and consistent? Can you be held responsible for problems or failures or a lack of information when everything is kind of consistent as a whole and there's no particular doubt? Well, there's a tipping point, right? There's a tipping point. Before, I think, the mid to late 19th century, it was considered foolish or unnecessary to wash your hands before clawing your way into people's guts as a surgeon. Now, if you don't wash your hands, I assume that would be pretty bad. As a surgeon, you gotta wash your hands. I always remember the guys in MASH scrubbing like crazy, scrubbing their hands, right? So, you gotta wash your hands now. Back in the day, were you responsible for not washing your hands? And then there was a tipping point, right? There was a tipping point. I've mentioned this before, but the guy who suggested washing your hands ended up being drummed out of the profession and ended up being locked in an insane asylum where he was beaten to death by an orderly. Bit of a price to pay. Be nice if society could stop punishing its innovators, but there are too many entrenched interests for that to happen. At least for now. So, you are not responsible for knowledge that doesn't exist. You're not responsible for knowledge that has only started to exist. And then there's a debate and a tipping point. And at some point, you become responsible. And of course, propaganda is there to give you a uniformity of opinion that prevents you from knowing or understanding right behavior. I mean, so when I was a kid, there were all of these teen comedies. I mean, they've obviously been going on since then. All of these teen comedies, and they all pointed towards the value of absolute degeneracy, of drugs, of drinking, of sleeping around, of girls beaten up on boys, that all excellence was terrible, and all sports guys wore, was it Ted McGinley style? All the sports guys wore their sweaters tied around their necks and were total a-holes and mean and abusive. All the good-looking people tended to be mean, and all of the nerds tended to be morally great. So just pushing anti-athleticism, anti-beauty, anti-integrity, anti-virtue, anti-self-restraint, and it was all pretty monstrous. And of course, all the parents were foolish, and all of the teachers were idiots, and pushing vanity and narcissism and a hatred of the high, the athletic, the beautiful, the handsome, the excellent, and so on, right? All of the kids who were really good at school were losers and conformists and apple polishers and teachers' pets and all of that, right? And it was really cool to be a pointless rebel with no future. Absolute degeneracy, almost exclusively, almost universally with regards to that. And it was all about getting drunk, getting high, getting stoned, getting laid. And all jobs were terrible and all bosses were terrible. And, you know, you were just dying to, you know, claw off your fast food apron and go out and cruise the streets and look to get drunk or high. It was all just terrible, just absolutely wretched, horrible, negative programming. I mean, not quite as bad as the absolute mind-fracking programming of something like Lethal Weapon 2, but that's a story for another time. Tale for another time. So, given that that was universally promoted am I responsible? Now, I never really got into drinking. I drank for a couple of weekends, and then the cost benefit was pretty obvious and pretty terrible. Thank you for the tip, my guardian angel. I appreciate that. And thank you also to R42 and, well, R42 twice. So I will get to your questions. So when you're subject to massive amounts of propaganda, are you really responsible? Can we call someone a communist if they grew up in 1950s Stalinist Russia, right, under the USSR? Can we call them a communist? Not really. I mean, they were given relentless propaganda, subjected to endless threats and bullying. And, you know, I'm sure they saw people who questioned the system getting broken on endless wheels of gulags and struggle sessions and so on, right? And even now, if you were to put out a story or a movie, like, I mean, I try to put out really wholesome stories in my novels. And I wrote like 30 plays and pretty wholesome promoting. So this is another reason why in the arts, it's very tough to do anything wholesome or positive. And yeah, the propaganda is relentless, endless, relentless, right? All the way from The Simpsons to Modern Family, where the boys are fools and the girls are endlessly wise. I mean, just promoting vanity and it's just gross. Just gross. Just gross. So when you realize that you need to elevate yourself to a higher moral state, what is your relationship to the prior moral state? I mean, I tell you, my relationship to the prior moral state was I was pretty angry at having been lied to so consistently over the course of my life. You know, how much time did I spend in church? Well, when I was in boarding school, I spent a lot of time in church, obviously. I mean, we would go two or more times a week. Whenever I would visit my aunts, and I spent quite some time both in Ireland and in the west of England with aunts, they were very religious, and we went to church. And maybe this is just me. I remember nothing. I remember nothing of value. I do remember one pretty funny young priest talking about God casting Satan into a lake and sticking up a sign saying no fishing. I remember that was funny. Didn't really do anything to help me. But it didn't provide any powerful or foundational moral virtues or values. I don't remember any, like not one. Not one. Just a bunch of, yeah, I mean, I liked the music. I liked the singing. That was nice. I think what I got, and I am in version 3.0 of reevaluating my relationship to Christianity, which I'll get to another time. But What I remember from church was a generalized feeling that I was bad and wrong, and there was a certain amount of contempt from the priests towards the congregation. A certain weariness, a certain hopelessness, a, you know, sinner beyond redemption, and that kind of stuff. I mean, I think I would have loved it if I had been able to get moral instruction from church. I would have loved that. I would have absolutely loved that, to be able to get moral instruction, something memorable, something powerful, something virtuous. Like, if church had named the enemy, it's kind of what they're supposed to do, right? If church had named the enemy, you know, like, well, there's this, I mean, they did in America, secular humanism, right? But if church in England in particular, I went to church in Africa, went to church in Ireland, Canada, I think I was, no, I was past it all that by then. But if they'd said, look, they're coming for your souls, they're going to teach you this, that, and the other, don't listen to them, don't date around, work is good, make friends with your bosses, a lot of bosses can be very helpful, and a lot of bosses can help further your career, and you're going to be, they're going to be pushing degeneracy, they're going to be pushing drugs and drinking and sleeping around and anti-work, and they're going to be programming you to be a useless loser so that you don't reproduce, right? I mean, if you look at the fall of the percentage of the world of the white population over the last 100 years, that's 125 years, I guess. Yeah, it's not tiny. And I think a lot of this has to do with, if you program males in particular to be cynical and morally dissolute, then they don't really tend to form families, or at least not stable families. And tell me if you guys, do you guys remember any really sort of deep or important or powerful moral lessons from church, from growing up? Stuff that, you know, when I was a kid, I had a set of binoculars and my father gave them to me. And, you know, you take the focus back and forth until things pop into focus. You go a little bit fast, a little bit back, a little bit fast, and then everything's clear, right? So isn't that the purpose of moral instruction? And that is, of course, the purpose of the church. Have you received the moral instruction that identify the enemies of your potential? It's the Diddy Party thing. Let me, right? Stroll around a little bit in our topics, right? So the Diddy Party thing, you know, the ain't no party like a Diddy Party thing, right? The Diddy Party thing is come and be loosed from all moral restraints, you know, kind of live like an animal, and it'll be great. And I think we're generally tempted by that as a whole. Go and indulge your senses, live like an animal, get high, have a lot of sex, you know, get an STD or whatever happens, right? And it's tempting. In the same way, you know, think like the welfare state, it's pretty tempting to say, well, I'm going to just let other people go and deal with or handle the poor. I'm not going to have to get my hands dirty. I'm not going to have to go down and figure it out. And I'm not going to figure out who can be saved and who's dedicated that are in self-destruction. Well, it's tempting. It's tempting to outsource your conscience and outsource your happiness, right? To outsource your conscience means other people come along and say, we're going to take care of this bad thing. This bad thing, we're just going to take care of it. And all you need to do is surrender your property rights and your independence and your own desire to help things. And when you go to promiscuity, you go to pornography, you go to drinking, you go to drugs, you go to video games, and, you know, and dissolution in general. And I mean, video games is obviously more complex because they can be fun and they can be social, right? But when it becomes a primary, then you're outsourcing your happiness, your dopamine to external things, not your own virtue, not your own success, not your own gritty determination to thwart evil and promote virtue. You and the idea that we can be happy through the stimulation of external things rather than the generation of internal virtues is the great temptation. It's the devilish temptation. It's so tempting that even paradise is overthrown by the desire for more. I mean, I try, you know, I have complexities like everyone, but I generally try to resist putting my happiness in things outside of my control. I mean, what can I control? I can control sitting down to do a show. I can control, you know, how well I communicate and how clear my communication is as a whole. And there's a couple other things that I can control. I can't control directly, you know, how many people watch, how many people listen, how many people donate. I can encourage it, but I can't control it, right? I can only control what it is that I'm doing. And I really do try to put my focus on happiness as a whole, being that which is generated from within and within my control. So I became a philosopher because the priests provided almost nothing for me. Again, this could be different for other people. Maybe I just had a series of bad luck with regards to the various churches I went to and priests that I encountered. But I knew quite a few. And even other things, like I was in the Boy Scouts for a couple of years and quite enjoyed that. Got no moral instruction there either. I learned how to build fires in the wilderness. I learned how to look for water. I learned how to pitch a tent. But as far as moral instruction, not. I don't remember anything. Nothing. Why is that? Well, as somebody who's tried to put a smidgen of moral instruction out there in the world, I assume that one of the reasons for that is a hopelessness and despair, which is if you are actually effective at putting forth moral instruction, well, you'll be attacked, lied about, slandered, blah, 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 right? Deplatformed and whatever, right? They go after your reputation and your income. I don't know why there is not a clear, I mean, there's lectures, you know, like you're a sinner and you need to do this, that, the other, and but there's not, here are the institutions that are leading you astray, and here's how they do it. There's no breakdown of the propaganda. There's no nothing. I don't really get that. I don't get why that's not a thing. Why that's not something that the church would really focus on. I don't know. But I think it's the biggest fault at the moment. I guess the biggest fault in the church at the moment. I mean, if I were a priest or if I were in charge of the church, I would say our absolute focus needs to be on revealing and encouraging people to understand the propaganda that is being used against them and the temptations that are constantly flowing their way. Right, the temptations to be less, to minimize their potential, to gain temporary happiness from external sources and so on. Why is it not? Why is it not happening? Why don't you walk out of there, you know, floating on air, because the world has like the binoculars come into focus. Why? I mean, there are really only a few logical possibilities for this. One, the church no longer recognizes temptation and sin and who pushes it, which I don't really, I mean, that would be like doctors not recognizing illness or what might cause it. That would not, to me, that would to not really be a doctor at all. Or two, they know about it but don't want to talk about it because either they don't think it's too serious or they think it's very dangerous or blah, 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 whatever, whatever, right? Or they don't want to get targeted, in which case, okay. Okay, so if you don't want to get targeted for thwarting evildoers and promoting virtue, that's fine. It's not an absolute requirement. But then don't lecture people. Don't lecture people about all of this. So thank you, Endogyne, for your support. I really appreciate that. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. All right, let me get to your comments here. Let's do another 15 minutes and then we'll go to donor only. And the donor only, of course, will be available if you're not a donor at fdrurl.com/locals or subscribestore.com/freedomain. All right, so let me get, I got a bunch of comments here, so let me get to them. Slapanta, I went on another date last night with a different woman than the last one I mentioned. She seems a lot more promising. I do have concerns, however, that being said, she's liking RTR and some other podcasts I've shared with her, including a call in did some years back. She loves the idea of peaceful parenting too. You went on a date and you're burying her with RTR, philosophy, call-in interactions, and peaceful parenting. Bro. That's a lot. That's a lot. Why would you? I mean, it seems like a tsunami. And that's four major things. RTR, philosophy, call-in shows, peaceful parenting. That's almost like a job interview or an audition. And let me ask you this. Is it reciprocal, right? Is she giving you stuff that's making your mind stretch to new dimensions and all of that, right? So that might be a bit over. That might be a bit of a tsunami, right? Drink from the fire hose. All right. Somebody says, if somebody lies to their current partner, is it guaranteed they will lie to you too? What do you mean guaranteed? Like there's no free will, it's all determinism. People can change and grow. My ex dated 3 years apart for seven. So you dated 10 years ago, started dating 10 years ago. You dated for 3 years. You've been apart for seven. Invited me out to a birthday dinner last night and then told me that he has a woman living with him that he's been dating for a year. He said he wants to break up with her and try again with me. I told him that even though there was nothing physical between us, it's still betrayal for him to take me to dinner without telling her. What's the best way to handle this? What do you mean, handle it? So he's cheating, or he wants to cheat with you, or he wants to get together with you while he's living with a woman he hasn't told about any of this, and I assume he hasn't told the woman he's living with that he's going out for a birthday dinner with his ex that he's dying to get back together with. I don't know what you mean by handle this. Thank you, Kevin. I don't know what you mean by handle this. I mean, surely typing this out has answered the question. You don't need me to say anything here. I mean, the guy's a lying scambag. Yeah, he's a liar. He's a liar. Getting back together with exes. I mean, when does it ever work? It usually takes about a week or two for you to realize, oh, that's why we broke up. Especially if you've been apart for 7 years. Why are you still hanging out with someone you broke up with 7 years ago? I don't understand. It's just preventing you from pair bonding or connecting with somebody new. So, yeah, it's a bad, in my view, obviously do what you want. You couldn't pay me enough to maintain a relationship with somebody who was a lying scam bag that kind of way. All right. So Penta says, oh, with regards to looking back negatively at your own moral decisions, for me, it would be justifying anything I wanted and twisting any interaction and choice as moral. This could be my previous weed, alcohol use, thousands of hours in video games, and not doing a good job at work, pretending to love women I was seeing, pretending people in my life were good, amongst a few other things. The realization I ran from for a decade has caused an intense amount of dissociation and depersonalization. Anger, rage, humiliation, shame have been feelings I've become quite familiar with. I still struggle with this, however, having gone to therapy, working out, dream analysis, being the most valuable employee I can be and doing regular journal entries after writing the 1,000 pages in a huge dump has helped a lot. The biggest thing, though, has been rereading and listening to old Free Domain podcasts and books while dedicating myself to understanding them and putting them into practice. Good, good. Well, congratulations. That's great. Somebody says, I regret enabling abortion over 10 years ago. I was an emotionless leftist. Now I come to a new realization, felt huge emotion. How do I move forward? Thank you. Anger at the people who lied to you and forgiveness for yourself for not knowing something that you didn't know. All right. Thanks for the points about propaganda, says someone, especially female vanity. I would suggest watching Myron Gaines, as his style includes some of these elements, but is very engaging. I think some cerebral and intellectual podcasts struggle with audience balancing discussions, like those which are very clear logically, but also reaching out to a wider audience with, and apologies for the lack of precision, the engagement factor. Okay, I don't, that sentence seemed to break apart like a meteor at the atmosphere, but I think I've seen Myron Gaines on X. Seems to be a pretty direct and brave fellow. All right. Somebody says, oh, Joe says, I don't remember anything of value from church either, just blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Somebody says, the greatest thing I got from church, and that game, the Catholic one, is the constant reinforcement, death is coming and time is limited. Well, but death is coming and time is limited could as easily push you to hedonism as it could to virtue. That's a great summary of modern indoctrination. Thank you. Somebody says, I am a Latter-day Saint. Prophets, apostles, continuing revelation, and authority is still a thing. Oh, and there is no such thing as original sin. Transgression, yes. All right. Somebody says, I was raised without religion. I currently go to a Baptist church. Can't say I've ever experienced any mind-bending ideas there. Plenty of cliche stuff, though. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot of church seems to have devolved into a kind of soupy, slightly narcissistic self-help chanty stuff. All right. Somebody says, church was very ineffective for me as I went to a wealthy one, but now that I'm in a larger city and there's greater struggle to keep audiences as well as the church being involved in the culture wars, we do get practical advice frequently around grit and determination. You should have grit and determination. I'm sure it's more than that, but... Somebody says, I recently advised an Orthodox friend on his marriage. He is devoutly religious, but the idea that love is related to virtue was alien to him. Really? I went through scripture to support the idea that love is a response to virtue, and I think I have. Okay. Well, good for you. Good for you. I mean, doesn't God love virtue and hate sin? I mean, hate the sin, not the sinner. I get all of that, but... All right. Wokeism is trying to worm its way into the church, but we fight it. Yeah, but it comes through. It comes through the women as a whole, right? Not as a whole. Tons of exceptions. It comes through women as a whole. And the church should know that, right? The desire for the unearned often comes through the women, women's greed, right? I mean, makeup is women desiring to be desired more than they naturally would be. Thirst traps on the internet are women trying to be desired more than they would be in real life. Filters, hair dye, you name it, right? Spanx, Ozempic, all of that. And if you look at the Garden of Eden, story of the Garden of Eden, Satan said, well, you can gain knowledge of good and evil. You don't have to work at it. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to study God and his thoughts and theology and philosophy and morality. Just eat a fruit, eat a fruit, eat a fruit, eat a fruit, and you'll get knowledge. Oh, I want that. Now, what that is something that is grown external to yourself. You swallow it, and you gain moral knowledge. Well, that is propaganda, right? That is wokeism. That somebody else has grown this fruit, you eat it, and you gain knowledge of good and evil. But that's you're just swallowing propaganda, right? An apple a day keeps the reason away, right? So you're just swallowing what other people have grown, which is absorbing propaganda and thinking you have the knowledge of good and evil, and then you move from paradise to suffering, right? Adam gets the curse of work, and Eve gets the curse of childbirth. And this is nothing negative towards women. Female nature is wonderful and beautiful, but female nature plus the state plus government education, that's terrible. All right, somebody says, I had some peers my age at a church. My mother took us to briefly. They stole my Game Boy and taught it and bullied me like a classic schoolyard bully. They tossed it around from person to person as I ran after it, laughing at my misery. The girls eventually ran to the girls' room, which I couldn't follow. It's not a positive moral lesson, but the whole scene made me very skeptical of Christianity at a young age. Well, why did you bring a Game Boy to church? And being bullied is not always the end of the world. It can toughen you up. Somebody says, I remember being impacted by the idea that God was good and expected us to be good too, that he gave us the world and all he asked for was us to abide by the commandments. It gave me a sense that being good was about maintaining a fair relationship with God. Later, I questioned God's existence and progressed into philosophy, but I think that moral archetype gave me an effective tool for discerning right from wrong before I had logical reason for it. Well, then it is just obeying rules, right? And this is the problem I have with religion. One of the problems I have with religion is you can avoid the moral rule simply by no longer believing in God. Whereas UPB, you cannot escape the moral rule at all. And this is why people fight. See, UPB is religion for atheists. Right, so if you're religious, you can't escape the moral rule. If you're an atheist, you can escape religious moral rules by not believing in religion. But UPB is religion, objective morality, or universal morality, or absolute morality for atheists. And since so many atheists have fled religion in order to avoid moral rules, in other words, to program other people with emotion-based propaganda, they do not like that they have fled God. And I resurrected God for atheists in the form of UPB. Meet the new boss. Same as the old boss. That's why they fight so hard. All right, let's do another minute or two. And of course, if you want to join the donor only, fdrurl.com/locals, or subscribestar.com/freedomain, or you can sign up, of course, at freedomain.com/donate. So we've got a bunch of other questions. We'll continue this conversation on the other side of the Donor-Only podcast. Thank you so much. Happy Sunday. Happy May. Happy life. Hope you're doing well. Freedomain.com/donate if you find this helpful later. I really would appreciate it. Don't forget to check out the free books, freedomain.com/books, free documentaries, freedomain.com/documentaries, all the other kinds of good stuff on the website. But I'll stop here for the non-donor section. We'll go to the donor section, and then maybe later I'll do a little doom stream. All right. Thanks everyone so much. We'll talk to you in a sec.